From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of April, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA says disaster assistance payments to farmers might be delayed for another year. Government economists say the farm economy is coming under some pressure from the banking crisis, and the EIA predicts the U.S. will not meet its cellulosic ethanol target in the year 2016. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And at the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, and all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the wheat at 550.5, up 25 cents for the day. July at 562.75 for the soft red, up 24.5. May wheat in Kansas City, 25.5 higher at 591.5. July there for the hard red at 601.75, up 24.75. Back in Chicago, where they trade corn, May futures were up 6.5 cents at $4.02.5. July at 412.75, up 6.5. And September at $4.22, up 6.75. December corn at $4.33.75, up 6.5. And the March 2010 at $4.45.25, up 6.5 cents. Soybeans, May futures up 25 at $9.77. July at $9.77 as well, 25.5 cents the gain. The August 9.62, up 25.5. And September at 9.33.5, up 26.5. November beans, 23.5 cents higher, at $9.52.5. January 2010 at $9.24.5, up 23.25. May bean meal at $2.97.40, up 3.10. May bean oil at $35.10, up $1.60. April live cattle 85.17.5, $1.40 higher. June at $83, up $1.62.5. April feeders at $94.47.5, $1.17.5 higher. And the May contract at $95.65, up $1.70. April lean hogs lost 47.5 cents to settle at $59.67.5. The May up 27.5 at $71.87.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby May crude oil settled today at $52.64 a barrel, up $4.25. June at $54.50, up $4.30. April ethanol at $1.59.4, up 2.4 for the day. Natural gas at $3.76.9, up 7.4. RBOB gasoline, May contract 9.6 higher at $1.46.8. And the heating oil, it's diesel fuel, 9.5 higher at $1.44.1. May propane futures 62.7 cents, traded 2.5 cents lower. And the gold futures at $907 at this hour and 40 cents an ounce, down $18.70. The Dow stands at 8040. That's 8,040, up just about 278 points for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 84.43 is down 1.03. And the CRB index has gained 8.47, currently trading at 226.28 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight in northwestern Illinois should be cloudy. Some light rain will change to occasional snow showers. In west central and southwestern Illinois, it'll be cloudy, showers becoming widely scattered later this evening. In eastern Illinois and Indiana, cloudy showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range from 30 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the southern parts of Indiana. Tomorrow in northeastern Illinois and northern Indiana, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, possibly mixed with snow at times. It is April. In central and southern Indiana, cloudy with lingering showers and light rain, mainly during the morning hours. In the remainder of Illinois, decreasing cloudiness. Highs tomorrow will range from 45 in the northern part of Indiana to 60 in the far south. The extended forecast says that active weather pattern will continue to stay in place for the next 10 days. More with Pete Levitt after the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Dan. How are you today?
Doing fine, Todd.
Well, what rallied the market in Chicago? Was it the outside markets? Crude oil was up. The Dow's up sharply, over 8,000 today.
Well, it was a combination of things. We had a little bit of everything, but as soon as I walked in the office this morning and saw the dollar was sharply lower, I think that kind of laid the groundwork for everything else to kind of fall in place. That is what kind of rallied the market in overnight trade. Then we came in here, weekly export sales for corn were very strong, pretty much in line for wheat and soybeans. The weather forecast looks generally wet for the next 10 days or so, so there's not going to be a lot of field work take place for the first half of April anyway. You begin to talk about concerns about the South American crop. So there's just a total combination. It was one of those days that was just good for the bull. It was just written for the bull here today, and he was able to take everything that was thrown at him on the plate here this morning. He ran with it.
And the lead option, May Corn, managed to settle above $4 at 402.5. How good is that sign?
Well, as long as you're in the mode of making higher highs and higher lows, you're in an uptrend, and that's been the case basically since the market pulled out of its early March low that we made here on March 2nd. With the first sign was to penetrate the February 28th or 26th high. It sliced through that quite easily. Continue to strength right on in here into this April 23rd time frame where we had this 403-404 high on the lead futures. We set back at the 777 level. Now we've turned around and we have taken out the March 23rd high. So we are in that sideways to higher type mode. Upside objectives here, the first spot here is going to probably that we're going to run into a little resistance here is going to be this 410 area on the May contract. If we can kind of clear that with some horsepower, then it's probably right on to about 440, 445 area. And that's also a spot on the daily continuation chart. There's a chart gap at 448, 453 that was left way back in October during the financial crisis and in the middle of harvest activity. So chart people, if we begin to really clear this 410 area, I think, on the May contract, you're going to hear a lot of 440, 450 type talk on the lead futures chart.
For producers on that lead that have corn, and I think there are more producers that have more corn this time around than they have in the past, left in the bin, where are you going to make the next set of sales?
Well, I think that's the place to shoot for. I've been kind of in the opinion that we maybe had up through May 1, maybe June 1, for this market to put on a pretty good recovery rally of the big decline that we saw here last summer, and so far so good. I think the real critical point here for the corn chart is when it hits this 429 area, which was the early January high. That is going to be a point of hesitation. So I guess if I was going to put my market advisory hat on, I would kind of shoot for this 4.25 to 4.50 and try to, you know, divide up my crop and kind of scale into that 25-cent trading range if I needed to get something done.
No, are you scared of holding anything under normal growing conditions into June, July, August?
Well, I have some reluctance of holding much inventory into the summer, but you know, things change. This is a very volatile environment that we're into. Who knows what will happen? But I do think holding a large inventory into the summer, that is like going to the riverboat. But I think a small portion that you can kind of put a small bet on, see what happens June, July. I don't have no problems with that at all.
That takes care of the lead option corn. How about the corn harvest month corn? How about new crop?
Well, Dease corn, very similar. The first hurdle here is kind of to clear last week's high, which was there at 435. I got a 439 is what I'm kind of looking at. Then we're going to have a little problems here around 445. That's a long-term downtrend line that connects, kind of the October high with a January high. And that could also be viewed as maybe a neckline of a larger head and shoulder formation. So Dease corn is going to start, going to be some resistance in this 439 to 445 area. We start clearing that, then I think the gates begin to open up for some bigger numbers. The first number I would probably be looking at would be somewhere around 468, 470 area would be a spot. That chart gap that I mentioned on the lead option in the 448, 450 area on the lead futures chart on the December continue on the December chart is up there around 507, 508. So we'll have to take one step at a time. A lot of this is we're basically officially now into a weather market, early growing season rally with the Planted Acreage Report behind us and the most uncertain time of the growing season right now. A lot of noise out there, and this is what makes this market have some upside vigor.
Hey, you talked about a larger head and shoulders. Is that a head and shoulders?
Bottom formation.
Bottom formation, okay. just double checking.
Yeah, the technicians would probably begin to, I think if you would begin to bust above this 440 and you start meeting some of these objectives like 470 or whatever, mm-hmm. you could probably begin to get some talk. We'd have to add about $1.31 on to 480. So what does that get us? That gets us up into that $6 area, or almost yeah. $6 or something like yeah. that. Yeah, 480 plus $1.31, about $6.10 or something. So you could begin to hear some of that. I'm not necessarily in that camp yet. I don't see the fundamentals, but. If you would push planting delays back into that May 1, I think the gates really begin to open up for some of those bigger numbers.
And one final question for you. We've got a couple of minutes left. Talk about the number of acres that disappeared in the USDA reports on Tuesday morning. What were your considerations? Did you expect that to show up? Half of those were gone already.
That indication on the outlook meeting right. that they weren't necessarily wanting to count all the acres. I think that's going to be the big concern for the trade from here forward.
It doesn't
that
seem the trade's
not those
convinced.
Acres are all accounted for. Yeah. My guess is. Come the June 30th report, the question right out of the chute will be, where did all the acres come from? And the question will be, how big a discrepancy there is from this March report.
Yeah, that seems to be the question on the mind of most traders, that they don't really believe USDA that all those acres will disappear over time.
Well, you got to have something to go along with it, and I don't see any incentive to leave land set idle at this point unless it's flooded out for something. Usually stuff will get planted. I mean, it's always easy to pull some beans out of the bin and plant them in a hurry. So I think, you know, my guess is that if this market performs as well as I think it could perform here over the next 30 to 60 days as the farmers are planting this crop, we could end up with a lot larger planted acreage numbers than what everybody expects.
Dan, thanks much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and joins us on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says continued computer problems at USDA could delay disaster payment checks until 2010. Vilsack made his statement during testimony before the House Agricultural Appropriations Subcommittee. The statement appeared to shock committee members. The subcommittee also pressured Vilsack to move faster on reform of nutrition and food safety problems. Vilsack says he wants to address concerns of those who oppose a mandatory livestock ID program. Vilsack said the current voluntary system created under the Bush administration is not effective, but he also says he needs to work with those who oppose changing it in order to improve the system. USDA and other government economists told a House agriculture panel yesterday that the farm economy, while performing better than other sectors, has not escaped the global recession or the banking crisis. Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank Vice President Jason Henderson says agriculture has taken a hit from the banking crisis, facing higher collateral requirements on operating loans.
Banks also reduced the term of operating loans as they were more reluctant to extend loans for longer periods of time. Our research also indicates that smaller farm operations and those owned by young and beginning farmers are more likely to be denied credit, but various programs are already in place to assist these borrowers.
Meanwhile, Acting Energy Information Administration Chief Howard Gruttenspecht predicted the U.S. will fall short of its cellulosic ethanol targets in 2016.
For 2016, the target is 4.3 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol. And it just, we have a good vision of there, and we know where here is, and the question is, can you get to from here to there? And it just doesn't seem likely.
The 2007 energy bill called for 21 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol use by 2022. The Environmental Protection Agency and the White House Office of Management and Budget continue to wrangle with the details of a proposed regulation governing the National Renewable Fuel Standard. A key part of the proposal includes an EPA analysis of the degree to which increased production of biofuels caused changes in land use and whether such changes increase, decrease, or have no effect on the overall level of greenhouse gas emissions. A finding that land use changes are significant would deal a terrible blow to the renewable fuels industry. That is because a biofuel seeking to qualify as a renewable fuel under the standard is required to achieve at least a 20% reduction in life cycle GHG emissions compared to gasoline. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's free. Just hit subscribe. If you don't like it, just hit unsubscribe in the same place over on the right-hand side of the page. You can listen to our daily ag programming right from the website or sign up to have it delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. And if you happen to be someplace where you can't listen to us online or can't hear us on the radio, you can always listen to us on your telephone. Just dial this number, 217-333-3434. We update at 10:30 and 3:15 daily. Now up next, you know, it only seems natural that the University of Illinois would deliver orange-colored corn. After all, our school colors are orange and blue, but the plant breeding and reasons for developing the corn are the real story. I'll have more on why it gets a vitamin A. Researchers at the University of Illinois and Cornell identified a gene a few years ago that increased the amount of beta-carotene in corn. Not only that, but they developed some inexpensive markers to locate the gene. The gene makes the corn orange in color, as you might expect, and along with it, increases the amount of vitamin A in the corn. Well, that's good news for hungry people around the globe, says Torbert Rochford.
And so this work is initially targeted for the developing world. Eventually, I think someday, I would love to see Illinois growing orange corn. But for now, for the developing world where they have vitamin A deficiencies and you can't get vitamins to them in parts of Africa, but corn, if you increase vitamin A, you know, it's self-perpetuating. They grow open pollinated varieties. So this will greatly accelerate and facilitate the ability of breeders to increase levels of vitamin A in corn grain for Africa and other developing parts of the world. I work with people in China, and I may be shortly working with people in India as well.
Torbert Rochford is a plant geneticist at Illinois. He says his work was initially supported by the U.S. government through USAID, otherwise known as the U.S. Agency for International Development.
Now, they contribute to Harvest Plus, which is a grand challenge program with the CG system, and I get my funding from them, and Gates is the major donor to Harvest Plus. AID will... We are working on strategies to rapidly implement the findings, and I work with Kevin Pixley at CIMIT in Mexico, but he has collaborators in Africa and China and India, and so we're working to rapidly implement the results.
But what does this all have to do with corn farmers in the Midwest? Well, it's pretty simple, actually. Rochford says he started working on the orange corn in the mid-1990s, and eventually it will pay off in the heartland of the United States.
And you work on it, it's for them, and then eventually we get it to a point where we've got it really fine-tuned, and then at that point, then the private sector here may say, okay, this isn't going to cost much, it isn't going to take a lot of time, we could add this to our corn. We're not necessarily going to get more money per bushel, but we can say for the on-farm feeder, this has more vitamin A.
It was work at land grant institutions in the late 1800s that led farmers to begin planting yellow corn. It contained more vitamin A than the very popular white corn varieties of the day. Because of the vitamin A, pigs gained weight faster when eating yellow corn. The World Health Organization states vitamin A deficiency is a public health problem in half of all countries, especially Africa and East Asia. It's a leading cause of preventable blindness in children and increases the risk of disease and death from severe infections. Adapting locally grown open-pollinated corn, maize, varieties with the vitamin A-enriched orange genes could alleviate some of this unnecessary suffering. Torbert Rochford and his colleagues have developed a cheap way to mark the genes and then set about transferring them. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. In just about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois.
It's National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. There does not seem to be any references to PBJs before 1940, but in World War II, soldiers were given rations of both peanut butter and jelly. When the war was over and GIs returned to the States, sales of peanut butter and jelly soared. By the way, the first known cookbook that contains recipes for fruit preserves was written in 14 AD. Peanut butter was invented in 1890, almost 1,900 years later. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, the periodical American Farmer was founded by John Skinner. begun as a weekly in Baltimore. The stated purpose of the periodical was to collect information from every source on every branch of husbandry. Skinner edited American Farmer for a decade before selling the magazine in 1830. By the way, the earliest issues also included a sports column, often focusing on horses and hounds. In 1863, the Richmond Bread Riots broke out. Shortages of food caused hundreds of angry women to march on Richmond, Virginia, and then on the governor's office, and then on the government commissary. It ended in a riot when they broke into the commissary and then other shops and buildings and carried out anything they could carry. Even the hospital reported losing over 300 pounds of beef. In 1872, George Brayton received a patent for the U.S. commercial gasoline engine. Its principle of continuous ignition later became the basis for the turbine engine. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, now joins us to talk about the weather forecast for today, tomorrow, the weekend, and probably a bit later into the month of April. Too high, Pete. How are you today?
I'm fine, Pat.
Farmers are looking, I think, at the forecast at this point and saying 10 or 12 days. That's not as good as I was hoping for. We've talked about persistence and rainfall before. 10 days look wet to you?
Well, it looks like we're going to see unsettled weather, actually, for the next week or two here. Just a string of weather systems coming along, one after the other, on a fast pattern of vigorous short waves moving from west to east across the country. One of these is going across the state today with some stuff coming out of Iowa and across northern Illinois, mostly showers, rain showers. And in extreme southern Illinois, we see another little band of showers coming across there. They'll get out of the way tonight and tomorrow. We'll get a brief respite tomorrow. And then Saturday, here comes another one that's going to breed in the southwest and come northeastward and cut across the state on Saturday and Sunday. That one is going to louse up the weekend with some pretty good rain statewide and into most of the central and eastern Corn Belt states. Then a brief clearing, and what do you know, we get another one coming along later next week, about late Wednesday or Thursday. So intermittent periods of maybe a day or two of relatively good weather, and then showers come along again.
The showers, much precipitation with the showers?
Yeah, I would say most of the stuff will be in a half to maybe 1.5 inches locally. I don't see any very heavy rains, only because the systems are moving so rapidly. They're not lingering at any one spot long enough to unload a lot of precipitation. The problem is, of course, it's relentless, and the ground is getting a little too moist, and we're going to have, I think, delayed planting as a result of this, with all of this precip activity going on into mid-month. We really don't see any end to the cycle. We know it eventually will end, of course, but as far as we can see, maybe a week and a half, it looks like it's just going to be a repeat performance every 2 or 3 days.
Other places around the planet you've been watching?
Yeah, and moisture seems to be the big thing, with abundance of it in most places. The one area, of course, that keeps having problems with dry weather seems to be the Argentine. but their crop season is winding down, and I think it's done about as much damage as it could. In Europe, the weather is cool and wet, and that's slowing the development of winter crops there. But the moisture will probably be beneficial ultimately. And in the Far East, they're getting good rain in South China, and that's good for crops there. They're getting dry weather and cool weather in North China, and that's not bad either, because they have some moisture for the wheat crop, and that's promoting early development.
Pete, thanks much.
My pleasure.
Peter Lavitt joins us on Thursday afternoon, agricultural meteorologist, right here on the Closing Market Report. He reminds me that as we move into the month of April and says that farmers will be backed up on their planting, they're trying to put nitrogen on as well and probably will end up getting in the field with those two passes, nitrogen application and planting pretty close together. Ran into GrowMark agronomist Howard Brown last night. He says to make sure farmers apply that nitrogen at an angle, otherwise you'll end up with a lot of burnt corn out there. You know it. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.